to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
I was at the Super Bowl and I got a chance to see 900 media Super Bowl. I was at the College Football Playoff National Championship game. It felt like a Super Bowl. And I got a chance to see like 900 media credentialed for the event as Ohio State beat Notre Dame. Just down the way, Front Office Sports, College Sports Business Reporter Amanda Krestovich was sitting there. She does a fantastic job covering the business of college athletics. She's joining us now. Didn't it feel like a Super Bowl? Did it feel like a bigger than college championship game to you?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me, and it was great to meet you. I think there were like 900 media members. It did not feel like an amateur event, I could tell you that, and I wrote about that. 77,000 people in an NFL stadium, 3 days of media events. For those, maybe some insider info, like even the media room, like at the Final Four, they don't have meals, free meals for reporters, a buffet, breakfast, lunch, and, you know, late night snacks, open bar, massage chairs. Like they don't have that for amateur events. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, that did feel Super Bowl-like to me. And it feels like they're wanting the game to be a Super Bowl. What'd you think of them announcing that the 2027 game will be in Las Vegas, and the dates with that, you know, kind of drew some, raised some eyebrows as well. But what did you think of that announcement?
It didn't really surprise me. Honestly, I feel like college sports gaining a foothold in Vegas is a long time coming. I mean, obviously, over the last several years, the NFL has really embraced Vegas, which is, you know, this great event city. And there have been college sports events. There have been, you know, as you know, and I actually haven't been to, but you probably have, conference tournaments and other events in Vegas. And I feel like it was like just a matter of time, you know. And I believe that there is going to be a men's Final Four in Vegas. I forget which year, but that was announced last year, I think. So, it didn't surprise me. And then one thing that I think is interesting about having a college sports event in Vegas is college athletes, there's so much consternation about, you know, sports betting and the concerns over gambling. But I remember speaking with folks in Vegas and they basically said, hey, like, we're used to this. So we have regulations on the ground in place that other cities don't have for sports betting and for protecting athletes and things like that. So in this sort of like pro sports betting era, they were trying to argue it's almost safer to have these events in Vegas from a sports betting perspective, which I can't confirm, but I thought it was an interesting point.
I am thinking about, you know, something I think you wrote about, and, you know, the feel of the event being very professional, and yet they're still trying to not classify this as a professional league. Will they out and out someday just call it professional football and yet it's, but, you know, under the college umbrella?
I mean, I think that's what a lot of people think they should do. It certainly would solve many issues. You know, a lot of people don't understand that collective bargaining solves issues like the unrestricted transfer portal, unrestricted NIL, this quote-unquote unrestricted free agency that college football has. Like, there's a huge benefit to the, you know, not even necessarily the players, but the coaches and the NCAA and any sort of organizing body in embracing an employment model, because that means that under the U.S. labor law, they can control and regulate, you know, these sorts of issues like trades and free agency, all the things that we see that the NFL gets to regulate, right? But will they do that? I don't think so. I don't think they're going to do that until they're forced to by a court case.
Amanda, you are, you know, in the business of talking with suits and talking with lawyers and talking with the commissioners. This is what you do. For a lot of reporters who are used to covering the sports side of it, the last couple of years has felt really different. But give me an idea on, you know, where is this all headed? NIL, the House settlement. You know, what do you think the next thing that happens in college athletics is?
Well, I think the next thing is what you just said, which is the House settlement. It's not a guarantee that it's going to be approved. And the more folks I talk to, the more concerns there are with the settlement and whether or not the judge who's adjudicated multiple cases in this sort of same arena with regards to the NCAA, there's some major concern about whether or not she's going to even approve this settlement. But beyond that, let's say the settlement does get approved in April, by the way, on the day of the men's basketball national championship. So that's going to be a fun day for all of us. I think then the question is collective bargaining and athlete organizing. Everyone agrees the athletes need more of a voice. Collective bargaining, as I said, solves a lot of these issues like NIL and the transfer portal, especially in football. And so I think the question is going to be, is there going to be a way to create some sort of organization where athletes have power to negotiate for themselves, either without informal employee status or, you know, if employee status is the only way? And I think that's going to be the next big question, because the House settlement doesn't solve a lot of the issues that college sports is facing.
The government will ultimately get involved, and lawmakers are rattling their sabers, saying that they'd love to put some committees together. And you had a recent report where you talked about the American Football Coaches Association hiring some lobbyists. What's going on in D.C.?
Oh, man, you were on the internet just a few minutes ago. Yeah, so, yeah, that was literally, I think we published that like 10 minutes ago. Look, here's the landscape. Every stakeholder group in college sports is lobbying up, because with the red wave that we saw in November, there's a belief that Republicans, and especially Senator Ted Cruz, who now has control over a committee with jurisdiction over college sports issues, there's a belief that lawmakers are going to be more interested in legislating on these college athlete compensation issues. So everybody's lobbying up. For a while, it was just the NCAA and the power conferences. Now, the Olympic Sports Coaches Associations, the Collective Association, some of the athlete advocacy groups are either have been doing their own lobbying, or they've hired lobbyists. And now, I reported today, but the AFCA said that they have two groups of lobbyists now that they are hoping are going to help them with whatever their, you know, the football coaches' interests are. We don't quite know exactly what that is, because the disclosure forms are like purposefully vague. But every single stakeholder group wants their say and wants to make sure that whatever this legislation ends up being, that they're on the winning side of it.
The talk is that they could. Are they trying to save amateurism, or are they trying to just make sure the athletes don't get taken advantage of like they always have?
Well, I think it depends who they is. If it's the NCAA and if it's the power conferences, including, you know, the Pac-12, because the Pac-12 stopped lobbying last year for obvious reasons. They had bigger fish to fry. But they were involved in this effort. Like, if it's them, I would argue they're trying to maybe not preserve amateurism so much as, like, preserve what's left of it. If you're talking about the collectives, and if you're talking about some of the athlete advocacy groups like athletes.org, who held a meeting during the CFP with players to try to teach them about athlete organizing, I think you could say, like, they're not 100% sure what they're advocating for. They're just there to try to make sure that the players don't get 100%, you know, the short end of the stick. But they're kind of in the more of, like, we want to make sure we develop relationships with lawmakers, so when we do decide the direction we want to go in, like, we'll have that power. And then the coaches associations, you know, they want to advocate on behalf of their sports. So whatever they think is best for their sport is what they theoretically are going to want in a bill. So if you're a swimming coach, you're going to want to make sure that Olympic sports get preserved in this new model, that there's some sort of mechanism to prevent schools from, you know, cutting your swimming program. And if you're a football coach, maybe, you know, again, it was like they were not very clear with me what they're actually going to be advocating for beyond something related to NIL. But it's like, theoretically, they want transfer portal restrictions. They want some sort of transparency in NIL. They want to make sure their players don't get, you know, taken advantage of by shady agents, things like that.
Amanda Krestovich with us, front office sports, a business reporter focusing on college athletics. We had Stu Jackson, the WCC commissioner, on Friday's show. He talked about, you know, the Power Four would like to have more control over NCAA championship events. It's one of many proposals that's out there. There won't be a, you know, nobody quite knows what they're up to because nobody's seen the proposal yet, but the NCAA is kind of downplaying it, saying, hey, this is one of many proposals. But what's the Power Four trying to do with the NCAA tournament? Do they want to run off with it? Do they want more access? Do they want control of the money? Do they want to sell media rights and, you know, have the ability to negotiate more for themselves? What are they after, Amanda?
Yeah, I think they want more access, which equals more money. I mean, look, I haven't seen the proposal either, but the argument that the Power Four conferences, you know, made last year, for example, around tournament time, was that, you know, it's the same thing that they argue with the CFP. They're like, we have, you know, we have the most competition of anybody, and we are in a literal league of our own in football, and they're trying to argue that in basketball as well. I remember Greg Sankey talking about how he thought that the Power Four should get more bids because, you know, to them, it's not fair to give an automatic qualifier bid to a team that men on the men's or women's side that is in, like, you know, a Division I conference that, like, from their perspective, is barely Division I. Like, you know, Big Sky or something. Obviously, the purpose of, like, a Cinderella team sort of disproves that theory. I also remember everyone sort of laughing in the SEC's face when they didn't end up going very far in at least the men's tournament last year. But that's the idea. So if they can't convince the current system to allow them more bids and sort of, like, squash the quote-unquote Cinderellas, they just want to create a new system. And they want more money for that system, and they want more units for that system, and they want more media rights for that system because they believe that more people are willing to watch Alabama football than, you know, some random school that you've never heard of. I'm not sure I agree with that, but that's what they're saying. So, again, it's always about money.
I'm curious, you know, if that will happen, if, you know, the NCAA is going to give up control of that. It really does put, you know, all the non-Power Four conferences in a really bad or precarious position. Before I cut you loose, you were on the field after the College Football Playoff National Championship game, and then you went, did you go to the Ohio State locker room? Is that right?
Yeah, I did.
What was that scene?
That scene was a lot of cigar smoke. I have, you know, had a few cigarettes in my day. Maybe I should not admit this publicly where my parents could hear it. But I had like a headache after being in there for 5 minutes. They were playing music. The whole team, like, at least a full pack of cigars. I did not catch the brand, unfortunately, but ever since, like, the Joe Burrow 2019 LSU cigar situation, they just, like, brought all these cigars, and every single player was smoking them. Like, so it was literally a hot box. And it was really funny, honestly. And I asked one of the players, I was like, did you guys, like, bring these cigars just in case you won the national championship? Like, what if you're the guy who brings the cigars and then you lose, right? Like, to me, I'd be very superstitious about that. He was like, no, we knew we were going to win. So, like, we brought, you know, like, we brought them anyway. And I was like, okay, yeah, sure. So I was thinking to myself, like, I wonder, like, if Notre Dame has, like, a box of cigars somewhere that they're just going to, like, throw in the trash or something. But it was a fun scene, that's for sure.
Amanda, I really appreciate your time and expertise. You can follow her on social media, on Twitter, of course, and elsewhere. Read her at Front Office Sports. I appreciate you, man. Keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah, thank you so much.
There she goes. And when her parents listen to the podcast, they're going to be disappointed that she smoked. You heard it here. Our Big Splash coming up.